Rule number 16. Speak not injurious words, neither in jest nor earnest.
I don't like this any more than you do, Allie,
Mary Kay whispered as we sat in the desk we were being forced to share. In olden times, there weren't enough desks for every student to have her own, so everyone had to share.
But we have to do it or we'll get in trouble, so let's just make the best of it.
Make the best of it? I had to share a desk with the whiniest girl in the world. A girl who'd stabbed me in the back and betrayed me, and then gone over to the side of the enemy. Multiple times. And she wanted me to make the best of it?
Oh, right, I whispered back. You know, I forgave you about the thing with the children's museum.
Can't you let that go? Mary Kay whispered. I told you, I lost your permission slip.
Except that she'd lost it on purpose and never told me until it was too late.
Why would you give something that important to someone else anyway?
Fine, I said. What was the point? But that Barbie exhibit left town, and I never did get to see it.
Are you still going on about that?
Mary Kay rolled her eyes.
God, I can't believe you even care. It's just Barbie.
Brittany's right. You're so immature. I felt tears prick my eyes.
It wasn't just that it was Barbie. That wasn't even the point.
What about you telling everyone about my book of rules?
I demanded beneath my breath.
Well,
at least Mary Kay had the decency to blush beneath the rim of her bonnet.
Who even does something like that? Keeping a book like that is just weird.
It's not weird, I whispered back. Lots of people keep journals.
Sure, Mary Kay whispered. Journals, not books of rules. Only a freak would do that, Allie.
Ladies!
Mrs. Higginbottom clapped her hands at us from the front of the room. Is there a problem?
No, ma'am,
we both said at the same time, straightening up in our desk. I guess we had been talking kind of intensely during her long speech about the history of the Honey Pot Prairie Schoolhouse, which hadn't had heat or electricity until the 1950s. If the teacher or students had wanted light or warmth, they'd had to gather around the pot-bellied stove in the middle of the room. Like I cared.
Well then, Mrs. Higginbottom said, since you're feeling so chatty, I'm sure one of you won't mind taking a trip to the recitation bench and reading aloud from this McGuffey reader.
She held out a beat-up old book. Great. We were busted. Because Mary Kay's face turned a deep shade of umber, which is darker than red, and her eyes intensely filled with tears, I knew it was up to me to save the day. Again.
Really? What would Mary Kay do without me?
And, as usual, she wasn't the least little bit grateful. I took the book and stood up, going to the bench Mrs. Higginbottom had pointed out. I will admit, my heart gave a big thump as I climbed up onto it. It was high, and a lot like climbing onto a stage. Then again, I love being on stage, and because this isn't really the 1850s, I can totally be a veterinarian slash actress when I grow up, like I want to. So I don't really know why I was so nervous all of a sudden. Maybe it was because of the venue, which is theater talk for the place where I was performing. The inside of the schoolhouse at Honey Pot Prairie was even worse than the kids in Mrs. Danielson's class had described it. I mean, it was old. It looked old. It smelled old. There was nothing interactive about it. It was just one big room, which is, I guess, why they called it a one-room schoolhouse, filled with desks built around that pot-bellied stove. All the kids who lived on Honey Pot Prairie, no matter what age, had to go to class in the same room, from the kindergartners to the high school kids. The teacher had to run around, teaching all the classes one at a time, giving each grade a different assignment to work on before turning to teach the next group. If you ask me, it's amazing anyone learned anything at all. I mean, what if there'd been a Patrick Day or Scott Stampley in the schoolroom? Or my brother Kevin, for goodness sake, demanding that everyone admire his hard hat? How much work do you think anyone would have gotten done with Kevin around, putting on his cute face?
Mrs. Higginbottom had explained to us as we came in, however, that in the 1850s, it hadn't been unusual for teachers to employ corporal punishment, which meant switches, a type of spanking done with a stick or ruler to keep unruly children in order. When she'd said that, I turned in my seat to give Stuart and Patrick and those other boys a look. But Scott Stampfli, at least, was being, well, good. There was no other way to describe it. He was sitting in the desk he and Joey Fields were sharing, with his gaze glued to Mrs. Higginbottom, not fidgeting or looking out the windows or trying to distract any of the other kids by making peeping noises, like he used to do back in Ms. Meyer's classroom. If I hadn't known him better, I'd have thought he was a perfect angel, a real Lenny Sue type. Maybe he turned into a positive influence, like me, since I'd moved to Pine Heights. On the other hand, how likely was that? Knowing Scott, not very. More likely, he was just waiting until Mrs. Hunter finally went away to go check on some other team before he made his move. Patrick was being similarly well-behaved. Well, sort of. He was trying to sit as far away from Paige, who was sitting as far away from him as she possibly could, on the bench they were sharing. Really? It was like Paige didn't want any part of her body or clothes to accidentally brush up against Patrick. While Brittany was pulling the same stunt with Lenny Sue. It was like both girls were convinced the boys had head lice. Cheyenne, meanwhile, looked the most miserable of anybody in the room. This was because her buddy, at least for the time being, was Mrs. Hunter. Under normal circumstances, I'm pretty sure Cheyenne would have loved having so much attention from a teacher all to herself. But today, for some reason, it really seemed to be bothering her. She kept looking over at where Scott was sitting and laughing really loud in this fake way at things Mrs. Higginbottom had said, then tossing her ringlets like she was trying to get him to look in her direction. But he totally wouldn't turn his head. Scott didn't seem very interested in Cheyenne. "Go on, dear," Mrs. Higginbottom said to me when I'd straightened up on the recitation bench. "Starting with lesson one, this is a real recitation that a student your age might have had to perform back in 1849," Mrs. Higginbottom assured everyone in the schoolroom. I could tell from everyone's glazed expressions that no one could have cared less. I knew I certainly couldn't. I bet everyone was wishing as hard as I was that we were in the nice, air-conditioned Space Quest planetarium with a Digistar sky projection system in 3D at the Children's Museum instead of stuck in the stupid one-room schoolhouse on this hot spring day with the sun blazing down outside the windows. "Okay," I said, holding up the frayed yellow book. "Here goes. George Washington's Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and Conversation. Rule the first. Every action done in company ought to be with some sign of respect to those that are present." "Do you understand what that means, children?" Mrs. Hunter asked from the back of the room. "It means that when you're in the company of others, you ought to be respectful and courteous of them. Go on, Allie." "Rule the second," I read. "When in company, put not your hands to any part of the body not usually discovered." "That means," Mrs. Hunter said, casting a look at Patrick, "when you're with other people, do not stick your hands down your pants or your finger up your nose." Everyone from room 209 laughed. This was because Patrick was always sticking his finger up his nose and wiping whatever he found in there on whatever was handy. Or even eating it sometimes if no one was looking. It wasn't because of this that I lowered the book, though. Smiling, Mrs. Higginbottom made a "go on, you're doing fine" motion with her hand. I lifted the book and read some more. "Rule the third," I read. "Show nothing to your friend that may affright him." "That means," Mrs. Hunter began to translate. "Oh, I know," Cheyenne said, raising her hand. "Don't scare your friends."
"Correct," Mrs. Hunter said. "Go on, Allie."
"Wait," I said. I was in total and complete shock. I just needed some clarification. George Washington, our country's first president, I said, wrote a book of rules? My voice cracked. That's how astonished I was.
Oh my, yes, Mrs. Higginbottom said with a surprisingly girlish giggle for someone as old as she was. And when he was a very young man. They might seem a little old-fashioned to you children today, but they're actually just common sense advice about showing respect for others and, in turn, respecting oneself. George Washington's 110 Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior was required reading for all pupils at Honey Pot Prairie Schoolhouse. If they didn't memorize them by second grade, they didn't pass to third grade.
I couldn't believe it. So I wasn't a freak, as my ex-best friend, Mary Kay Shiner, had suggested just minutes earlier. The very first president of our country had also kept a book of rules when he was a kid. A book so famous that school children had once been forced to memorize it. From my perch on top of the recitation bench, I looked down at Mary Kay, Brittany, and all the other girls who had been so mean to me that day at Walnut Knolls Elementary when the truth had gotten out about my own book of rules. What did they think about that, I wondered? That our very first president had kept a book of rules when he'd been a kid, just like me. Especially, I wondered, rule the 49th, which I'd already skipped ahead and looked at. Use no reproachful language against anyone, neither curse nor revile. I guess I wasn't the weird one after all. Not if a famous president had done the exact same thing I was doing. Can I keep this? I asked Mrs. Higginbottom excitedly, holding up the reader.
Oh, no, dear, she said, trying to take the book out of my hands, her expression a little suspicious, like she was afraid I might try to steal it. That's Honey Pot Prairie property. You can find a copy of George Washington's rules online, you know, for free. It's not copyrighted material.
I had no idea what she was talking about. All I knew was I wanted to keep reading the president's rules all day and see how they matched up to mine. It was like President George Washington and I were practically the same person.
It's all right, dear, Mrs. Higginbottom said, tugging on the book. You can let go of the reader now. Your turn on the recitation bench is over.
I realized I was still holding the book. Can't I said, tightening my grip, just borrow it for the rest of the time I'm here? I'll give it back before we leave Honey Pot Prairie, I promise.
No, Mrs. Higginbottom said, tightening her grip as well.
She also dropped her fake old-timey accent.
We need it for the next team of children who come in here.
Mrs. Higginbottom, Mrs. Hunter said, getting up from the desk she was sharing with Cheyenne, hadn't we better hurry up if we're going to make it to the bakehouse in time for lunch?
Mrs. Higginbottom looked at the gold watch pinned to the decorative waistband of her long skirt and cried,
Oh dear, yes, but we didn't have time to make our kickball out of rock and string or play pom-pom pull-away. Darn it.
I was pretty sure everyone on Team Shawnee was going to be able to overcome their disappointment. Especially when the man in the old-timey baker's costume appeared in the schoolhouse doorway, blocking out all the light behind him because he was so big, and demanded, his arms covered in flour,
Team Shawnee, are you ready to eat?
I hadn't realized until that moment how hungry I was. Time was kind of flying by, now that things at Honey Pot Prairie had actually started getting interesting. Yeah, most of us shouted back to him in response to his question.
Well, then get to the bakehouse, he roared. Because nobody who lived on Honey Pot Prairie in 1849 ate unless they made their bread themselves.